right, I guess we're ready to go. This is the time and place set for agenda, administrative agenda, A03-11. Appearing today in Carson City?
Rebecca Wagner.
In Las Vegas?
Luis Valera.
And Elena Burtonshaw. Item 1A is comments by the general public. Is there anybody in Carson City who would like to provide comments?
I have about 25 people lined up. Just kidding. Gotcha. There is no public in our hearing room today.
Okay. Are any comments from the general public in Las Vegas? No one is coming forward, so we'll move to item 2A. Ms. Jackson?
Thank you, Chairman. Item 2A is an informational item regarding our administrative fines by docket. The report covers our collection efforts from April 2008 through June of this year. You may note on page 2 there are several fines outstanding from our last show cause docket, which was docket 10-11007. If those fines are not paid by August 2nd, we will turn those over to the controller's office for collection. They'll be the 60 days past due by August the 2nd. Any questions on the fines report?
Anyone, Commissioner Wagner?
No questions.
Commissioner Valera?
None.
You know, the only observation I had is all of the fines, the vast majority of them are clearly from telecommunication carriers who we provided certificates to, and then I'm assuming have not paid their mill assessment?
That's correct. Some are the mill assessment. The one fine by UICN was as a result of a compliance order. But you're correct, the majority are due to mill assessment. There may be some TDD on there as well.
Okay. You know, of course, we see a parade of the telecommunication carriers coming in and asking for certificates, and then we see the parade of them asking to have a certificate. What's the word I'm looking for, Mr. Noble? Deleted, eliminated, gone.
Revoked.
Withdrawn.
Withdrawn. I was wondering, when we maybe, and I, this is a question for General Counsel's office, is it possible when we issue new certificates for telecommunication carriers, competitive telecommunication carriers, we can, in a compliance, ask them to post the first year's mill assessment?
Yeah, that's an interesting recommendation, our observation that, you know, I'd like the opportunity to look at it a little bit longer, make sure that when
sure.
run afoul of any of the statutes that we've got that mandate certain time frames for paying that.
Okay, that'd be great. Just threw that out there. That's all I have. Thank you, Ms. Jackson.
Chairman, if I could clarify, when you ask about the mill assessment, are you thinking going forward that they could post it in advance of the actual assessment date? Is that your question?
Possibly. I mean, I'm not sure that we can do that. I throw the question out there for GC to take a look at. I'm not sure it's possible, but I was trying to think a little outside the box so we don't keep having this string of stuff, if mm-hmm. we could do anything in advance.
You know, and I think my initial concern would be that we may not know what that rate is depending on, you know, when it falls, when the delinquency falls, because the commission does set it annually and it's subject to change. So we may not know an actual mill amount in order to assess it in advance, you know, even if general counsel determines that legally we can. I can tell you that we have been working on the show cause process with general counsel's office, with fiscal, and also with staff in trying to, you know, develop a little bit better process with these delinquencies and the reporting of these delinquencies and such. And so we're hopeful that that may assist in, you know, some of this. And I think also, and maybe Ms. Cuneo can weigh in here, but I think staff also, when these filings come in, I think they look to see whether or not the utility has had past delinquencies, you know, before they recommend approval of that certificate. Because a lot of times what will happen is these folks are delinquent. We may cancel their certificate as a result, and then they come back and apply again for another certificate.
So
So I do think staff's been working on trying to review those as they come in and, you know, may not recommend another certificate, or at least put it out there in a data request or.
Right. If I can, this is Anne-Marie Cuneo. What we also do is a lot of these small telecom companies have the same personnel. And so we kind of keep a list of personnel that have failed in their duties via other telecommunications companies. So when they file as part of their application, their list of board of directors and their treasurer and who they have running the company, we have kind of a tickle list as to perhaps who may be more likely to be delinquent, and we usually raise those issues then.
And this, okay, just if I could add, just looking at the list, it shows that starting in 2007, each year that list of people that are companies that have been fined is shrunk each time, and so I think the commission is doing a good job of weeding out the folks that are not following the law or paying the assessments and stuff. This next year there will probably be an uptick, because I think General Counsel's office is going to take a more aggressive approach in going after folks that are not only do not pay at all, but also do not pay on time. Just so that we don't spend a lot of time and effort chasing after the same entities year after year and then have them pay the fine at the 11th hour. But so I think the list is overall decreasing, but I will take a look at whether or not there could be some sort of avenue for posting payment, at least with
or like some sort of bond. I have no idea if that's possible. I'm just throwing this stuff out because it seems like we spin our wheels a lot with these telecom carriers. We give them certificates, we take the certificates away, then we spend all these show cause resources. And I don't know if they had more skin in the game, whether or not we would see a different result.
Okay.
So I have. I sure appreciate the information, though. I think that that's good. The tickle list sounds like a good idea, because I think that we probably, if we're seeing the same sort of conduct, then we certainly, you know, certainly creates a situation we have to question fitness. Thank you.
Okay.
Item 2B.
Okay, item 2B for your consideration today are suggested amendments to the commission's furlough policy, which is Internal Administrative Policy 4.3. Revisions were made a few moments ago attempting to clarify some of the language, and hopefully you've received a copy redlined, hopefully in red and blue, with a big revised watermark over the front of it. And that's the copy I'd like to work off of today. Does everybody have that?
I do not.
Okay. We're going to have somebody bring
you a
copy.
I'm sorry, Ms. Jackson. I am in error. I do see. Apparently, I need to get stronger glasses.
Okay. And Commissioner Valera, you do have a copy?
I do.
Okay, great. The changes are required as a result of Senate Bill 505 from the 2011 legislative session. And the changes are consistent with state personnel's emergency regulations pertaining to this matter. Senate Bill 505 became effective on July 1st and is in effect through June 30th of next year. The bill requires all full-time employees to take 48 hours of unpaid furlough leave each fiscal year. And part-time and less than full-time employees are required to take a number of hours equal to the average number of hours worked per day. So I'd like to walk through a few of these changes with you. First of all, starting with classified employees. The changes are that classified employees are required to take a minimum of 4 hours of unpaid furlough leave and no more than 8 hours of unpaid furlough leave, and not to exceed a total of 48 hours per year. No more than 8 hours of unpaid furlough leave may be taken in a pay week or in the same month. So the policy for classified employees stays with the 4-hour and 8-hour increments. Additionally, state personnel's regulations have implemented sort of a timeline with respect to the leave. Classified employees must take a minimum of 12 hours of unpaid furlough leave by September the 30th, a minimum of 24 hours by December 31st, and that's cumulative, a minimum of 36 hours by March 31st, and a total of 48 hours by June 30th in each fiscal year. With respect to leave taken in a pay week not to exceed the 8 hours, we could have a situation where an employee might want to take leave on June 30th and July 1st, which may be in the same pay week, and so that would not be permissible under this policy. With respect to the same month, if we had an employee requesting furlough leave on June 30th, on June 1st and also on June 30th, that would not be permissible under this policy. Moving on to the unclassified employees, we are sticking with the 8 hour increments. Again, that's not to exceed a total of 48 hours per year. And it's no more than 8 hours of unpaid furlough leave in a pay week or in the same month. The unclassified employees must take a minimum of 16 hours of unpaid furlough leave by September the 30th, a minimum of 24 hours by December 31st, a minimum of 40 hours by March 31st, and 48 hours cumulative by June 30th in each fiscal year. The part-time and less than full-time employees, they take their leave in proportion equal to the average number of hours worked per working day multiplied by 12 each fiscal year. So an example here is if you have an employee who works 6 hours a day, you take the 6 hours times the 6 days, which comes to 36 hours of furlough leave per fiscal year that employee would be required to take off. So no more than 6 hours of unpaid furlough leave could be taken in a pay week or in the same month for a 6 hour a day employee. I did put in an example, again, on a 6 hour employee, that they would have to take a minimum of 12 hours of unpaid furlough leave by September 30th, a minimum of 24 hours by December 31st, and a minimum of 36 hours by March 31st, totaling 48 hours by June 30th in each fiscal year. So certainly those hours are subject to change based on the number of hours worked per day for any part-time or less than full-time employees. The other changes
Ms. Jackson?
Are housekeeping. Yes.
I was going to ask you, maybe I misunderstood, but does the part-time or less than full-time person, do they have to take the entire 48 hours or just the 36 furlough hours?
36 furlough hours.
Then okay. Your example is wrong.
Oh, okay. And I'll make that adjustment. And the other changes are housekeeping in nature, cleanup. And this item is for the Commission's consideration and action today.
Okay, any questions or comments?
The only comment I have is that last year you handed out, or Donna handed out a sheet that said when your furlough day comes off your paycheck. I would like to have a copy for this upcoming year so I don't mess up my paychecks as I have in the past.
Will do.
So, and thanks for clarifying the that language too.
Okie dokie. The example, Ms. Jackson, any idea how that would be modified? I mean, we could just vote on it all at once right now.
With respect to Section 4?
The example in for unclassified employee, the full part-time or less than full-time.
And maybe Ms. Eaton Do you have a suggestion on how that?
Chairman, this is Dave Noble. Maybe if we could table this one till after 2E.
Sure.
And that way Ms. Eaton could work on those numbers.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good. We'll come back to 2B then and go to 2C.
Okay. Item 2C is the fourth semi-annual report to the Senate Committee on Finance and Assembly Committee on Ways and Means, which summarizes the Commission's operating revenues, expenditures, and resulting impact on reserve funds. The report covers January through June of this year. The Commission's optimum reserve range is between $2.2 million and $2.6 million, which does include the statewide budget cuts. The Commission's projected fiscal year-end 2011 reserve balance is about $2.3 million, which is within the optimum range. I would like to note that the last time we met, I did discuss a projected fiscal year-ending reserve balance of about $2.4 million. So we are slightly below that, roughly $100,000 less than projected. This is as a result of a reduction in our federal gas pipeline safety grant dollars due primarily to a decline in program costs, such as the state budget reductions. Otherwise, we are right on track with respect to our financials moving forward.
Okay, great. Any questions or comments? Commissioner Wagner?
I do have a question. In paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yes.
Sorry. It says that a decline associated with both a reduction in fuel and purchase power costs and electric utilities DEAA rates. I thought that those, maybe you can explain why that's relevant, because those are usually a pass-through for the utility.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner, and I may defer this to Mr. Anderson, as I believe this language came over from the policy advisors at the time when the mill assessment rate was set. Mr. Anderson, do you recall the relevance?
Yes, Ms. Chair. Commissioner, what I was trying to do is delineate the total reduction of the $348 million. Approximately half of that was just through the reduction in fuel and purchase power costs that reflected in the quarterly BTR adjustments. The remainder was reflected through a reduction in the DA rates that flowed through the rate process.
Right, I understand that. But how is the mill assessment assessed?
The mill assessment assesses, I'm sorry.
I think that the question might be with respect to how does this affect the gross operating revenues reported by the utilities?
Correct.
Because we assess based on those revenues, and they were somewhat less than past reporting. And so I think what Mr. Anderson is trying to say, that a portion of that reduction is as a result of these.
Okay, and my question is, I didn't think that the utility made revenues off of deferred energy.
They actually do flow through the
Do you see what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. They are actually treated as revenues.
Okay.
They're just an offsetting expense, so there's no change on net income. It's just...
Gotcha. That makes sense to me now. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Commissioner Valera? And I have nothing either. Thank you, Ms. Jackson. Item 2D.
Thank you. Item 2D are performance indicators that were developed by Ms. Cuneo and Mr. Anderson in conjunction with their staff that are specific to our two ARRA federal grant funded positions, the electrical engineer on staff side of the house and the policy advisor. These positions received approval by the legislature to be retained by the commission upon expiration of the grant period, which is for these positions, which is the end of February next year. As a contingency of that approval, the Commission was asked by the Money Committees to develop and provide performance indicators that would include results for both fiscal year 2012 and 2013. Since these are new indicators, we thought it would be helpful to have the commission review and provide feedback prior to submittal to the legislature. Again, keep in mind these are in rough draft form. I realize there are some inconsistencies and discrepancies between the two position measurements, and we can clean those up. But we're hopeful today to get some feedback from the commission with respect to the content itself. And Ms. Cuneo and Mr. Anderson are both here and available to answer any questions that you may have.
Ms. Wagner?
Of course I have questions. Ms. Cuneo, can we look at the performance measures for the electrical engineer?
Of course.
Let's start under goal one, and it's consistent without through a few of these. You've selected, under the performance measure, you've selected at least 70% must be assigned and have active input in at least 70% of the renewable dockets.
Correct.
What was the basis for 70%? And let me actually let you know what my concern is instead of cross-examining you. These positions are supposed to work entirely on renewable energy-related dockets. So my concern was, at least while they're federally funded, when I see that, that tells me what's going on with the other 30%, or are there so many dockets, if he participates in 70%, he's still 100% doing RO-related work?
Right, and the answer to that is actually kind of both. The way I had broken up the electrical engineer performance measures, if you have the goal one is just the chapter 704-766 through 704-785. Goal two is the 701B. Goal three is the UEPA. And goal four is the training. The 70%, you know, of course, we've never tracked these metrics before, so the 70% is a guess. But frankly, you are correct. The 70% is probably a full-time job the way it is. It also includes, remember, we have to do rec inspections.
Right.
And that takes up a fair bit of time with travel, with monitoring, with working with the PEC database, with answering phone calls, you know, those sorts of things. We wanted to give ourselves a little bit of flexibility with respect to, you know, there's only one person. He's allowed to take vacations.
Okay.
And those sorts of things. You know, we can change the percentage slightly. I had started off higher, and my engineers were a little nervous about that. But we can make them a little more nervous if you'd like.
We can do one of two ways. I prefer to make them just a little bit higher, and then in the cover letter to the legislature, explain what Ms. Cuneo just explained, so that there's, you know, no confusion that, like, the what the balance of time would be doing is still RO-related and job-related,
right.
But it's not being measured on a performance.
But it's not necessarily docket-related.
Right, right. So if we can just make sure that that's clarified.
Sure.
And
what percentage would you care for?
77.35.
Okay. No. Sure.
I just think 70 seems low. It's okay. Like, seems like a C, so why don't we go to 80?
That's fine.
And then my other comment is, and I would like to help make these consistent between both sets, and also to be consistent with the language in the grant, which I have the most familiarity with. In goal two, there's reference to gas utilities, and R is specifically electric at this point. So, That's just a cleanup in nature, but I just other than that, I think that they,
well, you know, they, the Southwest Gas does have a conservation, so
they do, but the ARA
is only
electric.
Okay,
so we just have to be careful.
Okay.
Until we get away from the federal funding.
Okay,
because I just don't want to get crosswise if someone saw these and said wait.
Right.
So
I understand. The purpose was is that they would look at Southwest Gas's conservation and DSM programs as well. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
That probably spawned a question for, of me as well. So the performance measures would need to be modified to reflect only electric, but I think that the RF funding ends in February?
That's correct, Chairman.
Would it be possible to have the performance measures reflect gas stuff after February of 2012?
I think so, and I think perhaps we could footnote.
Yeah,
and just, you know, delineate that, because moving forward, I think, you know, obviously these positions will want to handle additional renewable energy subject matters other than what's specified in the grant, and I think that was the legislature's expectation in approving these.
And that's, and I think Mr. Anderson included in his a footnote that talks about upon termination of RF funding, performance measures would include the natural gas utilities. So I think that if we just make sure that that's included in both, that that will address that issue. I'm just concerned during the RF funding portion of it, not to, right, to get sideways with DOE on it.
Right. Okay. So we just need to make that footnote in the electrical engineer spot too then, right?
And then too, we might want to consider, instead of explaining the percentage in a cover letter, to footnote that in the actual performance measure document, just so we don't lose that cover letter,
right,
so that it's part of the measure itself.
Okay. Commissioner Valera?
I have nothing.
Okay. Item 2E, Ms. Jackson.
With respect to item 2E, I don't have any other administrative issues, but I am ready to go back to the furlough policy and discuss the full-time and part-time example. So okay, if you look under section B, it's the subsection 5. Back to your question, Chairman. Ms. Eaton has redone these calculations. And so the change would read, in this example, the part-time or less than full-time unclassified employee must take a minimum of 12 hours of unpaid furlough leave by September 30th, a minimum of 18 hours by December 31st, a minimum of 30 hours by March 31st, and 36 hours by June 30th in each fiscal year.
Okay, great. All righty. Any questions or comments now?
No.
I have none.
Okay. Then I would vote that we, with the inclusion of the modification just made by Ms. Jackson on B, subsection 5, we accept the executive director's recommendation.
Second.
Concur.
Okay, and we have public comment again, item 3A. Is there anybody in the general public in Carson City?
No.
Is there anyone in Las Vegas who'd like to address the commission? No one is coming forward. We're adjourned.
New legislation, because we're all about that.